When he rises to the throne, Hezekiah, we can suggest, executes an elaborate, perfectly timed revolt, complete with a plan for surviving a siege. Thus is this remarkable king, a spiritual hero in Israel, revealed to also be endowed with singular strategic gifts. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 23, Hezekiah's Tunnel and Jewish Eternity. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In March of this year, the papers excitedly reported that the Turkish government had agreed to give back to Israel a long-desired artifact found in the Holy Land during the reign of the Ottoman Empire. Thus, the Times of Israel reported, quote, Turkey has agreed to return to Israel an ancient inscription from Jerusalem, currently housed in the Istanbul Archaeology Museum, an Israeli official told Zman Yisrael, the Times of Israel's Hebrew sister site. It is considered one of the most important ancient Hebrew inscriptions in existence. The gesture comes amid warming ties between Israel and Turkey and was discussed during the landmark visit of President Isaac Herzog to Ankara earlier this week, said a senior official in the Israeli entourage. Israel has long sought the return of the so-called Siloam inscription, a 2,700-year-old ancient Hebrew text that provides concrete historical support for the biblical account of the construction of a tunnel which brought water from the Pool of Siloam to the city of David, below the southern edge of the Temple Mount, during the reign of King Hezekiah. End quote. This was indeed exciting, wonderful news. There was only one problem with it. It wasn't true. Thus, several days later, a headline in the Jewish press read, quote, not so fast. Turkey denies deal to return Siloam inscription to Israel. Details of the deal, the paper continued, were reportedly worked out between Israeli and Turkish senior officials and were not discussed between Herzog and Erdogan. In return, Israel reportedly offered to send Turkey a valuable historical and religiously significant item from an Israeli museum. But there was no confirmation of the deal from Turkey. Now Turkish officials say the report is false and are denying there was any agreement. End quote. The article further cites diplomatic sources that said that as the artifact was found in what had been Ottoman territory and because Turkey does not recognize Israeli sovereignty over the part of Jerusalem that is the city of David. Therefore, quote, it was out of the question to return it to Israel, a third country in Turkey's view, end quote. The irony, audacity, and chutzpah of the moment is difficult to miss. Turkey will not recognize the Jewishness and Jewish roots of ancient Jerusalem. It will therefore not return an artifact that above all testifies to the fundamental Jewishness of ancient Jerusalem. But there's a larger lesson here, and that is that the Siloam inscription, like so much else, is a constant reminder of a fact which many today embrace, but which some, alas, would prefer to ignore, that the Jewish relationship with Jerusalem spans the ages and is itself a testament to the miracle that is Jewish history. As we have seen, the earthquake that hit the Holy Land in the reign of Uzziah is interpreted as an embodiment of the upheaval to be wrought by the Empire of Assyria. Uzziah is succeeded by his son Yotam for 16 years and then is followed by his son, Jehoahaz, or Ahaz, who reigns for decades and submits to subjugation at the hands of Assyria. Ahaz, moreover, embraces Assyrian pagan beliefs and those of the surrounding culture, suffusing Jerusalem in idolatry. Meanwhile, to the north, the 10 tribes of Israel are conquered by Assyria and exiled and assimilated, never to return. Ahaz thus leaves a covenantal people shorn of a huge percentage of their brethren and cut off from the Torah of the God of Jerusalem. Yet the prophet Isaiah foretells of the birth of a Davidic king who will mark the dawn of a new age. This was fulfilled through the son of Ahaz, one of the greatest biblical kings to ever live, Hezekiah, Chizkiyahu. Under Chizkiyah, not only was idolatry abolished, but sacrificial service of God was restricted totally to the temple in Jerusalem. Hezekiah also rebelled against Assyrian oppression, and in response, the king of Assyria at the time, Sancherib, sent forces into Judea, destroying every city that it overthrew. In one of those cities, Sancherib achieved a victory so overwhelming that he chose to memorialize it forever in his palace in Nineveh. As I described in my Tikva, Jews, the Case for God series, these images are now in the British Museum, arranged across the room. On one panel, we see how Jewish prisoners from Lachish are flayed. In another, women are led into exile by Assyria. and in another, men sadly strum harps as they are forced into slavery. With Lachish destroyed, Sennacherib ultimately sets his sights on Jerusalem, and Hezekiah prepares for a siege. The Bible, in a brief clipped tone, succinctly summarizes how his men engaged in one of the most astonishing feats of engineering in the ancient world. We are told, Hezekiah also stopped the upper watercourse of Gihon and brought it straight down to the west side of the city of David. What this means is that Jerusalem's water source, since its very beginning, was the Gihon Spring, which lay not in Jerusalem, but rather in the adjoining valley. Therefore, during a siege, it would not be accessible. Hezekiah sought to ensure the availability of water during the Assyrian assault and to deny Sennacherib access to that very same water source. He therefore created a tunnel between his own city and the Gihon, diverting its waters to within the city, creating an entirely new water source, what became known during the Second Temple period as the Pool of Siloam. The location of this new water tunnel, in which water still flows today, was rediscovered in 1838 by Edward Robinson, and decades later, a young boy, spelunking in the 1880s, came upon a stone plaque in the tunnel. As the City of David website describes, the message on the stone had been inscribed by the very workers who had created the tunnel, and translated, the plaque on the tunnel wall reads, "The day of the breach, this is the record of how the tunnel was breached. While the excavators were wielding their pickaxes, each man towards his co-worker, and while there were yet 3 cubits for the breach, a voice was heard, each man calling to his co-worker, because there was a cavity in the rock extending from the south to the north. So on the day of the breach, the excavator struck each man to meet his co-worker, pickaxe against pickaxe. Then the water flowed from the spring to the pool, a distance of 1,200 cubits. What the plaque reveals is that, incredibly, the diggers of the tunnel had started from 2 different openings, one group from the Gihon outside the city and the other from within the city walls, and then, incredibly, they met in the middle. It is this testament to Judean ingenuity that was taken by the Ottomans to Istanbul, where it sits in a museum to this day. The tunnel is indeed a wonder, and we would be missing the enormity of the achievement if we focused only on engineering and not on strategy and statesmanship. Herschel Shanks, in an article in Biblical Archaeological Review, cites geologists who calculated how long such a feat must have taken. Quote, "The geologists very carefully calculated the length of time it would have taken to dig Hezekiah's tunnel. The rock, they noted, was very hard, massive dolomite stone. They consulted local Jerusalem masons familiar with this rock formation to determine how much could be hewed in an hour. They knew the size of the tunnel. They knew the tunnel was dug by 2 crews working from opposite ends. Based on all of this, they assumed a 24-hour working day with 6 4-hour shifts of workers a day. Their conclusion, it took about 3 years to dig plus 1 year for planning, or a total of 4 years." End quote. For this reason, these geologists argued that the tunnel could not have been created in the age of Hezekiah. For this, they noted, was an elaborately planned construction and no mere emergency measure. But while the origins of the tunnel continues to be discussed, Herschel Shanks responded to these geologists that, in fact, the amount of time it would take to create the tunnel corresponds perfectly to the information that we have about Hezekiah and his age. Assyrian records reveal that several nations rebelled against Assyria. We know precisely when this revolution took place, and we know as well from the records when Sennacherib set his sights on Jerusalem. Shanks writes, quote, "What the geologists ignore or are unaware of are the historical Assyrian records. These records reveal that Hezekiah actually had 4 years to prepare his defense, precisely the amount of time the geologists say was needed to plan and hew the tunnel. Years before Hezekiah revolted against Sennacherib in 705 BCE, other rulers in the West had tried to escape Assyrian domination. For example, Ashdod had revolted in 714 BCE. Hezekiah declined to join this revolt, which occurred during the reign of Sennacherib's father and predecessor Sargon II. When Sargon died in battle in 705 BCE and Sennacherib assumed the throne, he faced revolts from numerous vassals. Hezekiah soon joined the coalition of states that revolted. He refused to pay tribute to the Assyrian ruler. But for 3 years, Sennacherib was occupied with suppressing a Babylonian revolt in the east. Only then did Sennacherib turn west. In the words of Johns Hopkins biblical scholar Kyle McCarter, Sennacherib sent an army across the Euphrates, his only western campaign, with Jerusalem as its principal target and final destination." And Shanks adds, "In short, this was not a surprise attack. The attack came in 701 BCE, 4 years after Hezekiah revolted, exactly the time it took, according to the geologist, to build Hezekiah's tunnel. Hezekiah could clearly see the attack coming, end quote. What this means, ladies and gentlemen, is that the tunnel might teach us how the rebellion against Assyria was planned in a way which reveals the monarch of Jerusalem to be a brilliant strategist and statesman. We can imagine Hezekiah growing up in an idolatrous court, smarting at his people's subjugation and at his father's devotion to idolatry. Then, when he rises to the throne, Hezekiah, we can suggest, executes an elaborate, perfectly timed revolt, complete with a plan for surviving a siege. Thus is this remarkable king, a spiritual hero in Israel, revealed to also be endowed with singular strategic gifts. Of course, if this aspect of Hezekiah's brilliance is not emphasized by the Bible, it is because, as we will see, ultimately the survival of Israel against this fierce enemy that has destroyed so many will be due to a source higher than Hezekiah himself. And this, of course, is what the artifact reminds us today. Israel is, of course, right to ask for the return of the plaque, and one suspects that it is precisely the connection to ancient Jerusalem made manifest by the artifact that has led some to seek to prevent its return. But in the end, whether or not this remnant of Hezekiah's Jerusalem is restored to its rightful place, it continues to remind us that there is no other nation who has a story like this one, a country and a people that has been assaulted by the empires of the earth, and yet returned to its land and reestablished its state. The Israeli ambassador and intellectual Yaakov Herzog once described a conversation that he had with the anti-Israel British historian Arnold Toynbee. Toynbee asked him why the Jewish claim on the Holy Land was different from other ancient peoples' connection to their former country. After all, Toynbee said to Herzog, how can I explain to Nasser that here comes a nation after 200 years and claims the right to this country? And what shall I tell him if he asks me, what about the Vikings in Norway who settled in England 1,000 years ago? What if they wanted to go back to London? So Toynbee said to Herzog. To this, Herzog replied that Toynbee would have a point if there were still Vikings. And Herzog said to the historian, how can you apply to this case the ordinary laws of history when, as you yourself have written, over a score of empires and cultures have risen and disappeared from the horizons of civilization during the same period in which this little people has continued to exist? End quote. For most artifacts in most museums, objects bespeak an ancient past. But for the Jews, they reveal the story of a city that continues to embody Jewish eternity. And tomorrow, we will see how the salvation from Assyria expresses why being a Jew today may be the greatest miracle of all. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.